Well, hello everyone, you're listening to Your Faces, the podcast. I'm Morgan, I'm with the amazing Blackett. And the beautiful Meg.
Hello.
And we're going to talk about lots of things today. And I'm sure I'll do some kind of slick beginning when I realise what we've actually spoken about in the future. So we're going to start today with the media news. And the main thing this week has been the US sensation of Susan Boyle from Britain's Got Talent. And the horrendous, you're only doing burlesque because you're fat woman who did burlesque and got her tits out. So what do we think of Britain's Got Talent, everyone?
Well, I can hear it from the other room. It's on in my living room at the moment. And yeah, there is an atrocious, what looks like a transvestite belly dancer on this time. Yeah, Susan Boyle. I didn't watch it. I don't really care in any way.
I can't watch it. It makes me feel sick.
I think it's the vacuousness that is that judge. What's her name?
Oh, Amanda Holden.
Amanda Holden. I just the black hole charisma that is Amanda Holden and the satanic Piers Morgan. There's just no reason for me to ever give these people viewing figures. It's horrendous. There appears to be Kenny G at the moment playing saxophone. It's just appalling. It's like the end of term showcase, but in front of 16 yeah. million people, which is just embarrassing for a concept 60. Of a show.
Oh, no. 16 million people that want them to fail and will jeer and tell them to get off the stage. It's like Jeremy Kyle in the evening with people who think they have a talent and then get their lives devastated when they get that noise. It's horrible.
Yeah. I feel sad for the ones that think they have a talent. I'm not so sad for the ones that are just weird.
Reading The Guardian, and they were talking about how it's almost become absurdist David Lynch programming. Because we've got a man eating Ferrero Rocher in front of a theatre, and this is television. Last week there was a man who wanted to break the record for the amount of Ferrero Rocher eaten in a minute, which is six. He managed four, and Ant off stage managed to eat five. So this was his talent, but it was the oddest thing. It was absurdist kind of surrealism. And somebody...
The world record for eating Ferrero Rocher is six. I feel like we could break that.
A record is a record. That's all I'm saying. On the next podcast, Blackett will try and eat six Ferrero Rocher in a minute. But Susan Boyle now has become major media property. Oprah wants her on a show. Ashton Kutcher's Mrs. Demi on her Twitter said that she wept when she heard her sing I Dreamed a Dream.
She can't weep.
Yes, she can. She sucked all of the youth out of Ashton Kutcher. So she can live off him for a while. He's like a unicorn, apparently. What do we think of this? Has this just been drummed up because there is no good news at the moment? And it's quite nice to see a woman who's obviously a virgin and never even looked at a boy pushed forward as our new kind of bastion of Britishness.
Heroine of Britain, apparently. But, I think it's the whole... We're like a freak to succeed.
Hmm.
And there's got to be something that people can say about Britain, because let's face it, at the moment there's nothing apart from credit crunch and economic death for everybody. So it's quite nice to see her with her one eyebrow leaping across the pond and people in America loving her.
It is really weird to see.
A bit epic.
It is. And Amanda Holden pretending to cry at her. It's just... an embarrassment.
It's beautiful, David. It's meaningful. I think it's nice. I think the British loving the underdog, the person who would never succeed, and this is her venue, her chance to actually shine, and for maybe people to look at others in a different way, because when she came on stage and the audience jeered at her and they shot to this teenage girl who was talking to her friends, making fun of her, then all of a sudden she started singing in a rather nice way. I think it's good. I think it challenges perceptions of people.
It does. If they then got the girl out of the audience and said, well, you know, what do you think of that? Because you were wrong, stupid bitch.
Now, that is a programme I would actually watch. Walking up to people and going, you're a bitch. You judged a book by its cover. Do you realise you're such a cow? Although we have that, actually. Snog, marry, avoid. I don't know if you've watched it. That is the most painful programme on television. But equally genius. We'll probably speak about that in the future. So, Susan Boyle, the hero's champion. that's about it, really, on Britain's Got Talent, which none of us watch but seem to have a lot of an opinion about. Yeah? Today, this is Saturday we're recording this, and Claire and I live blogged and watched Primeval Episode 4. Claire, one word review?
Shit.
I would hasten to agree. Last week, actually, we really enjoyed it. It was interesting, although the death of Douglas Henshaw's character, Cutter, did seem a little bit forced and didn't seem to have the size and weight of a death of your lead character, which just shows more about the series itself rather than that actual episode.
I think the man had only done one week of filming because he appeared in about 3 minutes of the previous episodes, so I don't think it really was going to have that gravitas to it.
Yeah, but it's still the third series. We've been with him for 2 series and he's living in an alternate universe, which people seem to have forgotten about.
I think it shows how weak the program is, though, that each series they've had to really strongly reinvent itself. Series 2, alternate reality, the arc was introduced, series 3 now, and we've lost the main character. It just seems a bit they're lost, and they keep on trying to reboot it in this desperate need to pump energy into a program that is failing.
It's a shame. It's as if they haven't grasped hold of their own concept. I mean, Claire and I were both saying that there are just far too many subplots in it at the moment. I mean, we've got the police officer who's now a renegade dinosaur helper. We've got the man with the muscles who's linked with the army people back at head office. We've got the home office woman who seems to know more than she's letting on, trying to control future predators, which I swear we did last series. There's just too much happening, and I'm not interested in any of it.
No, and for something that is on at, well, it is Saturday prime time, so children are going to be watching it as well, I don't think it makes any sense. And I would really struggle, and I do really struggle with it, so I'm not really sure how a 7-year-old who wants to have a show about dinosaurs is really going to pick up anything from it.
Well, they've given up on dinosaurs and just created mythical beings. I mean, they had that demon, that creature that could change its surroundings.
Oh, yeah, for Claire doesn't know that they, at the beginning of the series, they decided, through some convenient plotting, that the anomalies were actually where mythical creatures come from. That the god Anubis was actually a dinosaur from the past. So they got this historian lady who will then track down mythology and they'll find the source of where the anomaly is actually from. So Pegasuses are actually creatures that came through anomaly from another time, etc., etc.
Oh, breaking news. So, on ITV right now is a trailer for the rest of the series. And PC Plod, who had a vendetta, is now their new leader, according to it. And then there's new rules.
On the Times website, there is a cast photo, and he's at the front of that, like, as the leader.
It just seems a little bit ridiculous, to be honest. And this week, it just showed how much they cared about their secondary characters when they just trod on the news people. We weren't even sure if they died or not.
That's a good point. We weren't sure, were we? No. I assume they're in the past. But...
Well, he drove a helicopter into the anomaly, and then all of a sudden the people with the camera went away.
Yeah, that's true.
It was poor.
I just didn't care.
I'll watch that episode. Why did a helicopter go into the past?
Oh, to drive the Gigantosaurus through it the anomaly.
Okay. So what could Primeval do to make itself better? It's still got 6 episodes to go. Will we continue watching?
I'll continue watching because I've invested. I want it to be good. I really do. I think the first series showed a lot of promise. It just didn't have the love it required. And that this series, they just seem to have gone off mental and decided they need an arc which goes throughout the entire 10 episodes. They need constant cast changes. And it just seems it's been meddled with too much. I think what they need to do is go back to their core. And if they could do Monster of the Week really well. They just need to shrink the team, because it seems ridiculous that when they go to catch a Gigantosaurus, they don't take the army people with them. And they're trying to make it real. It doesn't make sense. There's too much stuff happening in offices with the smoking man. They're trying to do the X-Files and it's not working. That was quite a long answer.
That's pretty good, really. I totally agree that if you don't trim the cast down, people aren't going to know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. I don't really care at this point. And the trailer for next week, which was what people are turning into mushrooms.
Well, some fungus is turning them into a monster. It looks a bit like the Las Pelagas from Resident Evil, to be honest.
Oh, dear.
they're trying too hard. They could just be dinosaurs. I mean, that'd be fine. I'd be quite happy if each week a dinosaur came through and they solved it. I mean, David really enjoyed the really enjoyed the saber-toothed tiger breeding episode. That was a great episode. It made sense. It was a full-on story. Last week's was almost a full-on story.
I thought last week was a story. I thought they had intelligent plotting, and they have this interesting idea now that the audience knows more about the anomalies than the cast do. So we're going, oh my god, just discover this, why can't you just see it? And I think that's quite interesting. It keeps the audience tense that they know that the team they're watching is just on the verge of finding this huge discovery.
Mm. Well, that's Primeval that we would like to see do better, because, you know, we need it. We need more children's fantasy. We need more drama on television. I'd agree with that, would you? Just more,
yes.
More drama, less talent show.
Well, I always think we're comparing Primeval to Doctor Who, but the other BBC option at the moment is Robin Hood, and hands up if we care about that.
Robin Hood gets relatively good viewing figures and is watched by a very strong, constant viewer. And it's very good for young families. That's why we don't hear about it, because it's not cool in any way. But the BBC are happy with it. But next year, there'll be no Keith Allen. He's not going to do it anymore. So they've lost their kind of best character. But I've never really cared anyway about
They lost Robin Hood next series as well?
Yeah, yes they have. Jonas Armstrong's leaving. Yeah, so bye-bye Robin Hood. So, moving on in TV world to Doctor Who. We've got three left, and John Barrowman apparently thinks that the next Doctor is attractive. That's news.
Not really.
And he's also said that, you know, Captain Jack would be available should he need it. Which blatantly means that he hasn't been asked to go in the fifth series. Thoughts?
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. If he will insist on wearing purple lame suits on television, he can't really be expected to be picked up for, not a serious drama, but, you know, it has its moments. And no, he's not allowed back.
No.
Well, do we think there's going to be another Torchwood after this five-episode series?
The way that they're talking about it in interviews, it doesn't seem like Torchwood in its current form will continue, but it does seem that Russell T. Davis is keen to keep it going. By form, I just reckon that Barrowman's out, and there'll be something else coming in its place, because Torchwood's very good and catches a demographic that the BBC aren't catching with their own custom-made drama. They can't close down Cardiff. They spent too much money on Upper Boat. So they need it to continue, really. Unless the rumour of the Lee Evans spin-off is true.
Oh, God.
Which is unlikely.
May I take a moment to think of a Lee Evans spin-off and how atrocious that would be.
Magumbo and... what was his name? Brian.
Oh, dear.
That would be awful. Oh, God. But Doctor Who, we're excited about the next specials, but I'm less excited about the specials, to be honest, than I am about Series 5. How are you?
I'm the same. I want to see Matt Smith do something now.
Well, the next special I'm not bothered by. It can't be any worse than the last two. But the last two specials, the one where it's going to be the Doctor dying, I think they're going to be interesting.
But I'm just more excited to see how Moffat takes an entire series. I think I want something new now. I almost know exactly what David Tennant's going to do in every episode.
It's a shame that it's like that.
It is, definitely. But I'm looking forward to the next one, because it looks like all my favourite episodes from the last two series. So
Yeah, it should be good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's TV done and dusted, isn't it? Okay, so now we're going to talk about our films. We're all obviously looking forward to Coraline and Wolverine. So we'll start with Coraline. David, you know more about this than anyone, so introduce us to Coraline.
Coraline, the Neil Gaiman story of a girl ignored by her parents who escapes to an alternative world where everyone wears buttons on their eyes and everyone's a little bit happier until it turns out it's being run by an evil, murderous Terry Hatcher. So, Yes.
Is that a spoiler alert, Blackett?
No, it's the story.
I know, but that's a spoiler, though, isn't it? The evil bit of the Terry Hatcher?
I think people are probably going to gather that Terry Hatcher's evil.
Just because it's typecasting.
Well, yeah.
So, Coraline in 3D. Claire, are you looking forward to it?
I am. I'm a little concerned about the 3D because now the last two films that we've watched in 3D, which was Nightmare Before Christmas and Bolt, apparently my colour register is not particularly good and I don't see a lot of the 3D. So I'm a bit worried I'm going to miss out.
Oh dear.
Can we look at your eyes then?
Maybe if I get buttons.
Buttons
for eyes, topical. Well, interesting me is the use of Twitter at the moment with Coraline, as Neil Gaiman is one of the most followed people on Twitter, and he keeps putting up kind of comments, and he's really excited about it. So there's photographs of him next to all the billboards and pre-releasing stuff that hasn't come out yet. It's very interesting to watch this kind of the middleman of the media disappearing if you can just get it direct from the writer of the book, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, I think that is interesting, and it will be the way forward. Like Stephen Fry's been doing a pretty similar thing on Twitter while using his website as well, that he's actually showing behind the scenes of whatever he's up to straight away whilst it's happening. I think that's one of the beautiful things of Twitter.
Oh, if anyone wants to follow me, by the way, I'm at This Is David. David Blackett is Faces and Ever, and Claire is Blakeborough, which if you can spell first off, you get a prize.
You do get a prize. I don't know what the prize is yet.
Your wit and insight on Twitter, Claire. That's what they get.
That is what they will get.
And also follow our friends who are great as well. You can follow Mexican Pony. He's fantastic. I'm sorry, I'm being distracted by a horrendous drag queen on Britain's Got Talent. That is,
I told you,
awful. Jeez. There's no talent in being a drag queen. It's just wearing a dress, isn't it? This will be edited out as well because all the gays will hate us. Oh, dear. Anyway, what else are we going to talk about? Ah, it's games time, everyone. So we're going to find out what we're all playing and what we think of it. So we'll start with you, Blakeborough.
I am playing Mad World for the Wii at the moment. It's gory beyond all belief. I didn't think it would be quite as bad as that. It's basically Sin City-esque, so it's black and white except for the blood, which does take a little bit of getting used to because you don't really see what's happening around you unless you really, really concentrate. It's taught me that black and white is quite difficult to look at for long periods of time because it hurts my eyes, but it is quite satisfying to be able to chainsaw people from their middle through their head.
Awesome. How's the mechanic with the remote? Is it easy to play?
Yeah, so easy to play. Oh, that's the other thing. It makes use of the Wii motion controls like no other game. So say you have an enemy on the floor, for example, and you can walk up behind him and pull your nunchuck and remote away from each other and you'll snap his neck.
Wow.
So it's pretty inventive with the controls. So you do find yourself gesturing quite scarily in the living room.
Awesome. Blackett, what are you playing?
At the moment, I'm playing a bit of an oldie on the Xbox. Bioshock came out in 2007. Tells the story of an underwater city called Rapture, and you're playing Crash Lance above it, and you end up walking the city and trying to find out what's happened. It's gone into ruin. Everyone's gone a little bit mental. They're trying to kill you. And it's absolutely beautiful. It's got this like Art Deco feel to it. It's absolutely stunning. Probably the best thing about it is the story. I've never played a game where the story is this engaging and this intelligent. Even simple things where the way you collect your power up is by saving these little girls. And you have a choice whenever you find one. You can either rip a thing from inside of it, which will give you an uber power up at the time, or you can save her, and then she'll run off, you'll get a smaller power-up, but you'll receive more in the future. So it's kind of a moral question, even just a simple idea like that of powering up your character is made into a questioning how you play games and how you think about the gaming world. And I've just discovered a huge plot twist, which has made me rethink gaming completely, and it actually blew my mind a little when it happened. I'm so impressed, I'm recommending everyone to play it.
Fantastic. Have you played it yet, Claire?
I haven't, no, because I don't have an Xbox, but come June the 6th, I will.
Woohoo!
Yay!
I'm a bad games player, so I'm actually playing a really old one on our new DSi, which is it Kirby's Magic Paintbrush?
It is indeed. Power Paintbrush, Magical Canvas, and other regions of the world.
That's it. It's amazing. It's the most fun game. I love Kirby. I think he's a very underloved member of the Nintendo family, and more games should come out for him. Hopefully there'll be one on the Wii soon. But it's fun, and it makes really good use of the stylus controls. It's really simple and fun to play, very cute and interesting, and the perfect platformer. I love platform games. I can't get into big stories. I'm playing Half-Life 2 at the moment, and it scares me too much to play. I get too tense, so I'm awful playing games like that. But give me an old-school Sonic game or Super Mario Brothers, a new one on the DS, and I'm very, very happy with just lovely platforming. And that is what Kirby is, and it's absolutely brilliant, really good fun. We've just got the other Kirby game, which is...
Superstar Ultra.
That's it, something like Ultra Superstar. And we're going to give that one a go as well, and we'll let you know on your face. Well...
I'm reading the book currently that you lent me about the rise of Starbucks.
Oh, do you want to talk about that then? You
can
talk about
Starbucks. I'm really enjoying it, actually. For something that I thought would be a bit dry.
Oh, it's not actually...
Yeah, I thought that. And there's not really a lot to say. It's how Starbucks was founded, how Starbucks now dominates the Earth. It's really interesting. And the ways in which they have put themselves forward as a brand is pretty fascinating. But as David says, the way that the writer actually sort of puts it to you is very nice. He does it in a kind of a friendly chit-chat way, which I like.
Yes, definitely. And he's very knowledgeable. At the same time, he's talking in a very colloquial way. He drops in theorists, just like splatters theorists everywhere. And if you look in the back at the reading list for the book, it's absolutely huge. It's about 15 pages long, I think. I was just quite impressed by the amount of work he actually put into the background. It's an interesting read. He doesn't condemn Starbucks, but he also doesn't love them wholeheartedly either. I think it's quite balanced. I think it's a good read if you want to learn about a global conglomerate.
Fantastic. And I don't read books, so I'm not involved in that one. Right. So that's everything for this podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. And don't forget, you can catch up on all the latest news at yourfacesnava.com. See you again soon. And sorry we didn't talk about Wolverine, but we will once we've been to see it. Bye-bye.